Midwest manufacturers don't have time for half-baked plans or one-size-fits-all consultants. Stoke RGA delivers tailored strategies with real execution, real alignment, and real results. If you're aiming for long-term growth, we're ready to go. Start at StokeRGA.com.
You are listening to New Manufacturing Insights, the official podcast of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance and Insight Publications. I'm your co-host, Ann Franz, Executive Director of the Alliance.
And I'm Kate Bruns, Manufacturing Editor at Insight. I want to thank Stoke RGA for sponsoring this week's episode. Stoke RGA, growth strategy built for your shop floor and your bottom line. As always, you can learn more at StokeRGA.com.
I am so excited about our guest today because I've known him for many, many years. And he truly is one of the innovators and really thought leaders of our alliance. Jeff Anderson has been on our board for many years and serves as treasurer, and I really appreciate it. So Jeff Anderson is the president since 2012 of Precision Paper Converters, a facial tissue converting company based in Kaukauna. After more than 16 years with the company, he is well positioned to talk about the past, present, and future. And I'm pleased to say Jeff Anderson is with us in the studio today. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to see you.
Hi. Good to see you. Good to be here.
So you spent a lot of years in manufacturing, and you currently lead Precision Paper Converters, as Ian mentioned. So could you just start out by telling us a little bit more about the company? I know you're excited to talk about facial tissue, the products you produce, and the markets that you serve. Just give us a little overview if we're not familiar.
Sure. Yeah, it's pretty simple. We make facial tissue. The interesting fact about that is we're the only company in North America with that as our major product. Everybody else that makes or sells facial tissue, it's a small to very small part of their product portfolio. So facial is only 5% of the tissue market. So bath tissue, towels, napkins, they're all much bigger. Facial is the smallest category by far, and it's the hardest to make. So it's a little bit crazy to specialize in that one little niche, really narrow, but that's what we do, and we do it well. We're a contract manufacturer, so we work for other paper companies or brand owners. We don't have our own brands, and we don't work directly with retailers, so we work through our partners. We have about 65 team members in Kaukauna, all in our one plant. Company's been around in its current form since 2002. There's six of us that own the company, not family, six unrelated individuals who always see things the same way.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah. And yeah, that's what we do. We're in a bit of a growth phase. Our vision is to be the best folded tissue products manufacturer in North America. So broader than facial. Folded would include napkins and towels, and there's probably 40 of those, and we're trying to be the best of those.
I'm curious, if you don't mind, so why is it harder to make facial tissues compared to others?
That's great
exactly
question.
What I was going to ask too. There you go.
This is where it gets controversial.
Okay.
Other companies will be like, what is he talking about? Facial has the main softness requirement, because if you think about it, tissue products generally are used in intimate areas, but facial especially goes right up by your face. So it's got to be soft. So, and that creates challenges in converting. So getting it to interfold so that each one pops up after the next one is a challenge. Getting it in a carton is a challenge. The whole process of interfolding is a really interesting process. Too long a discussion for this. but compared to rewinding, so taking big rolls and making bath tissue or roll towels, that's much easier, much faster, fewer people involved. So facial's the toughest.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
So I was a big fan of Beverly Cleary books when I was a kid, and Ramona Quimby.
Okay.
There's the book chapter where she pulls every single tissue out of the box one by one. It's like the most satisfying moment of her life. So as you're saying that, I'm thinking, oh, Ramona, like, what are you doing? It was so hard to get them all folded into each other like that. Oh, that's funny.
That's right.
No, that makes sense. And we all have had the, like, bad facial tissue where our noses turn red during during cold and flu. So I appreciate your attention.
Yeah, it's noticeable, right? When it's not done right, you can tell pretty quickly.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about the overall paper and converting industry and some of the major changes that have happened over the years and what trends are affecting you guys at Precision?
Well, again, we focus in that one little niche, so I don't want to get too far outside my expertise. But we do see a lot of big paper companies that we work with. You know, trends in our industry, rising costs, especially paper, so parent rolls. There's not enough capacity in the U.S. for tissue. So it's over the last 20 years, it started to be imported more and more, which is a real challenge. Mm. We don't do much of that. But in the industry, it's a challenge. So the whole supply chain has become more challenging. And then beyond that, we got all the challenges that companies our size, light manufacturing, have. People, talent, you know, the reason we're involved in the manufacturing alliance.
You know, that leads to the next question. As workforce development continues to be a top priority for manufacturers, what strategies have been the most successful Precision Paper Converters in attracting, developing, and retaining employees?
Yeah, it's a challenge. I'm not sure we're that good on the attracting side compared to other companies in the alliance I talked to. I mean, we try to look at diverse populations, and we've done okay there. We have really strong retention. I would suspect it's in the top quartile for sure of companies in our area. We had about 20% turnover the last 2 years, and the great majority of that is in the first year. Mm-hmm. So if we get somebody to stay a year, generally they stay a long time. Mm-hmm. So our average tenure is really high because we have a lot of people who've been there a long time. So retention we're good at. Recruiting, I would say, a challenge. And in the development area, I'd say we're pretty good. Mm-hmm. We're big on education and career development, huge on that. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's our focus. And we're good at it, but I'd love us to be better. Mm-hmm. So,
I know you've taken advantage of some of the industrial maintenance training classes that we put together.
Yeah.
Which is great. What is one thing that you're doing in retention that is putting you in that top tier?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I see turnover averages in manufacturing overall, it's like 38% nationwide. I think it's a little better than that here, but I'd still put it in the high 30s or mid 30s. I'd say just be a good person, it starts with, you know, and then for us, our core values are all around people. So, you know, if you're a good person and generally, you know, care, like really care, mm-hmm. about the team, and that's why you exist, and not so much about the economic factors, that's critical, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, if any of our board members or owners are listening, that's critical. But the best companies I see and who we aspire to be are those companies that are bigger. They exist for something bigger than themselves and bigger than just the money side. Mm-hmm. You know, can you better the lives of your team members, and can you contribute to the community overall, and mm-hmm. can you not do bad stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, so I wish I had like a secret formula I could lay out there, mm-hmm. but I'd say it's just be a good person and treat people the way you'd want to be treated.
Mm-hmm. So technology and automation continue to evolve across manufacturing. Where have you seen the greatest return on investment from technology, and where do you see future opportunities?
Yeah. I would say in more automated equipment is where we see the biggest return. So we're taking older equipment. Our oldest lines are from the early 2000s, so they're not old. But back then, there was a little more manual component to it than now. The newest lines, mm-hmm. we just installed our newest one in May, are highly automated all the way through, such that one person runs a line with five different processes. So that's the biggest return. Then from there, it's kind of the simple robotic automation. So pallet stacking, mm-hmm. some case pack, you know, offline case packing processes. Those are the ones. We have major FOMO, fear of missing out, in terms of like the more complex automation and robotics. I see some of that around here and I'm like, wow, that's cool. I wish we could do more of that. Mm-hmm. And then of course, AI, we're just getting into that. We're working on a few agents, but I'd say it's hard to see where it goes for us. And it, certainly there's no return right now on that investment of time, mm-hmm. but we're just sticking with it to learn because it feels like there's going to be a return and it feels like it's the wave of the future. So we're in that, not sure we know what we're doing, but learning mm-hmm. about it as we go.
Mm-hmm. So, as Ann mentioned at the top, you've served on the board of directors for the New Manufacturing Alliance for several years. What motivated you to become involved in NUMA, and why have you continued to dedicate your time to it?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I think back, I think Ann found me and probably we went to coffee and talked about
yes,
it.
Yes, I remember.
That tracks.
Yeah. And, you know, the mission resonated with, well, you know, things that were important to us. And I've served on lots of nonprofits. I was a school board member for many years, so got involved. I think Anne said I might be one of the longest serving now, which is crazy because I'm pretty sure I'm still one of the young people. That's not true. But I feel like I am. Uh-huh. But over the years, it's just a really cool, dynamic organization, mainly because of Anne. Mm-hmm. And the people who got it organized, who've, you know, kind of retired now, but came back for the 20th anniversary, Rick and Paul and Mark. So I feel like now sometimes a bit of a bridge to the past, not the original past. Anne was part of that, but the group that followed. And, you know, there's a handful of us who've been on a long time and have served as chairperson, you know, and tried to take a leadership role for a point. So it's just really cool trying new things all the time. You know, things that don't seem like they're going to work. Golf tournaments and trade shows. And it's just, it's really done a great job of its mission. It's been personally fulfilling for me. I've met great people, networked. It's been great for our company, mainly the grants that we've used for our education initiatives. So it's an organization to be proud of, to be a part of. So, yeah, I really like it. At some point, you know, I wonder if there's a rotation. And it's like, we got to get rid of some of these old guys.
No, but, you're stuck. Sorry.
No, it's been really fun and rewarding and valuable.
So you talked about the grants. Are there other specific programs or value adds that you've taken advantage of with NUMA as a company?
Yeah, Dan Jansen, our talent safety director, is on the safety task force, and he's learned a lot. I'd say other than the grants, then it falls under, like, just general contributions. Yeah. So, you know, we love that we're part of contributing to all the scholarships and the learning that goes on. And I still think back to, like, COVID and some of those board meetings we had virtually. And I tell the story sometimes. We had a board meeting to talk about temperature monitors, if we all should get together and buy them together and have people scanned as they come in the door. And you think about, that was a real issue then. It was critical. And now I think back, did that really happen? Did we spend 2 hours talking about that? But I learned from some really smart people through, you know, COVID, how to get through that. And then our business has just really benefited from the learning that, you know, when we go to the quarterly meetings or when I go to a board meeting, we bring stuff back and we use it. It's good.
So looking ahead, what excites you most about the future manufacturing in Northeast Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think what I really like is the upskilling of jobs. As we can automate more, manufacturing's come a long way from when NUMA started 20 years ago. The jobs are more fulfilling and interesting and more career-like, where you can build a career. And I'm excited to see that keep going. We still have a few jobs in our plant that I think that's not a career. That's a job you do while you build a different career and in manufacturing. But I want more of our jobs, all of them eventually, to be like, that could be a career. You could do that for several years or many years and really build a successful contribution to your family in that career. So that's what I'm excited about. Then, like, you know, reshoring and demand increasing, those are cool things too, but just making the industry more fulfilling and interesting and fun is the biggest thing.
A little bit of a spoiler alert for our August issue of Insight. I wrote about a project that Marion Body Works did in automation, and I was interested in, you know, what their outcomes were on the backside. It was a very innovative, very aggressive project. And one of the outcomes that they pointed to as being the most beneficial was the employees said, thank you, you've given me opportunities to advance my job, you know, to upskill, to move into new opportunities, like just exactly like you're saying. And I thought that was really good because there's so much of that narrative about automation taking away jobs, and they've actually found it to be really beneficial to their employees.
That's great.
So yeah. I think you're spot on with the opportunity there if we handle it right, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Kevin, the president, was a former podcast guest.
Absolutely.
And he's also on our board. So.
And a 40 under 40 from Insight.
I know, my goodness.
We love Kevin. Now, this is not the Kevin show. This is the Jeff show.
Maybe it should be. That's pretty cool. Let's talk about
that. No, no. When you were saying that, I was thinking about that piece. Yeah,
that's cool. I, you know, those kind of We tend to do smaller, like, you know, what's the return on investment? We've done a lot of smaller automation projects. I guess the big new production lines are bigger projects. But like a cool AI robotics that really got people, that would be cool. I would like to do that.
So you've had opportunity to work with manufacturers across the region through your involvement with NUMA. So what's one common trait you've observed among the most successful manufacturing companies?
I don't know that I have one.
You can have more than one.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'll probably talk about three. You know, one question that comes to mind is what is successful for a business, right? So I talked about the economic factors, return on capital and increasing shareholder value. And then, so that's one factor, right? Those, and then, but the ones that can combine that with kind of being dynamic and growing, like I see in NUMA, and you see all kinds of companies in Northeast Wisconsin, like that Bellmark comes to mind, and they're doing some cool stuff with daycare. I don't know if daycare is the right word, but, you know, companies like that. So that second factor, if you can be dynamic, growing, really learning. And then the third one is just really being, having a, you know, a mission that's bigger than yourself, than bigger than the company, bigger than just the economic factor. You know, are you really in it for us, for our 65 team members? And if you include owners, call it 70 families rely on our business. And our core value, that's why I come to work every day. And that's why what we talk about is how do we build this thing and grow it so those people can support their families going forward in, you know, more successful ways, have more resources, more time, more flexibility, more interesting jobs to go to. So companies that can do all three of those are the ones that I look at and go, wow, that's cool. That's what we want to be like. And there's not a lot of those. So that's what we aspire to be. That's what I maybe see in the, if I define success that way. Yeah.
So I know over the years, I truly have learned so much from you. So thank you. And I have to ask, of all this great stuff I've learned from you, what is your best leadership insight?
I think, again, there might be three. I don't know.
That's all right. We'll give you three.
One is just be a good person. Like, it seems Bob Chapman's book, if you know, if you know Bob, he just passed. PCMC, which is now BW Converting. So in our industry, he wrote a whole book on just be a good person. I mean, why is that a book? Why do we need a book for that? But that's the first one, just care. You know, that cliche, they don't care what you know until they know that you care. Just care and like really do it. And then learn, keep learning and growing. And that's, you know, you get to be 60. I'll be 60 this year. It gets hard to be humble and, you know, have a beginner's mindset and be like, I'm still learning. I got so much to learn. So that would be the second one. And then be curious, you know, ask more questions. Just understand people and processes and problems and customers and partners. And that's what we try to do.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for being on New Manufacturing Insights podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So as always, we would like to thank Woodward Community Media for production support and Stoke RGA for sponsorship support. New Manufacturing Insights is new every Thursday, everywhere you listen to podcasts. Ann and I will be back again with another great guest next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.